So tonight we will take a dip into the nectarian ocean of Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the ninth chapter, the most confidential knowledge, text number 14. Satatam kirtayanto mam.
Satatam kirtayanto mam.
Yatantascha dridha vritha.
Yatantascha dridha vritha.
Namashantascha mam vaktya.
Namashantascha mam vaktya.
Nitya yukta upasate.
Nitya yukta upasate.
Satatam kirtayanto mam.
Satatam kirtayanto mam.
Yatantascha dridha vritha.
Yatantascha dridha vritha.
Namashantascha mam vaktya.
Namashantascha mam vaktya.
Nitya yukta upasate.
Nitya yukta upasate.
Satatam kirtayanto mam.
Satatam kirtayanto mam.
Yatantascha dridha vritha. Namashantascha mam vaktya.
Namashantascha mam vaktya.
Nitya yukta upasate.
Nitya yukta upasate.
Satatam.
Satatam.
Always.
Always.
Kirtayanta.
Kirtayanta.
Chanting.
Chanting.
Mam.
Mam.
About me.
About me.
Yatanta.
Yatanta.
Fully endeavoring.
Fully endeavoring.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Dridavrata.
Dridavrata.
With determination.
With determination.
Namashyanta.
Namashyanta.
Offering obeisances.
Offering obeisances.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Mam.
Mam.
Me.
Me.
Bhaktya.
Bhaktya.
In devotion.
In devotion.
Nitya yukta.
Nitya yukta.
Perpetually engaged.
Perpetually engaged.
Upasate.
Upasate.
Worship.
Worship.
Translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Srila Prabhupada.
Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Purport. The Mahatma cannot be manufactured by rubber stamping an ordinary man. His symptoms are described here. A Mahatma is always engaged in chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. He has no other business. He is always engaged in the glorification of the Lord. In other words, he is not an impersonalist. When the question of glorification is there, one has to glorify the Supreme Lord, praising his holy name, his eternal form, his transcendental qualities, and his uncommon pastimes. One has to glorify all these things, therefore, a Mahatma is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is attached to the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord, the Brahma Jyoti, is not described as Mahatma in the Bhagavad Gita. He is described in a different way in the next verse. The Mahatma is always engaged in different activities of devotional service, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Hearing and chanting about Vishnu, not a demigod or human being. That is devotion. Shravanam kirtanam Vishnu and smaranam, remembering him. Such a Mahatma has firm determination to achieve the ultimate end, the association of the Supreme Lord in any one of the five transcendental rasas. To achieve that success, he engages all activities, mental, bodily, and vocal, everything, in the service of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. That is called full Krishna consciousness. In devotional service, there are certain activities which are called determined, such as fasting on certain days, like the 11th day of the moon, Ekadashi, and on the appearance day of the Lord. All these rules and regulations are offered by the great acharyas for those who are actually interested in getting admission into the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the transcendental world. The Mahatmas, great souls, strictly observe all these rules and regulations, and therefore they are sure to achieve the desired result. As described in the second verse of this chapter, not only is the devotional service easy, this devotional service easy, but it can be performed in a happy mood. One does not need to undergo any severe penance and austerity. He can live this life in devotional service guided by an expert spiritual master. And in any position, either as a householder or a sannyasi or a brahmachari, in any position and anywhere in the world, he can perform this devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus become actually Mahatma, a great soul. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gunanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. So, we are speaking tonight about what is called full Krishna consciousness. If we distinguish something called full Krishna consciousness, then we must be talking about something else called partial Krishna consciousness. As soon as you say full Krishna consciousness, then you apply something else, you're implying something else called partial Krishna consciousness. Actually, Krishna consciousness has many gradations. Partial Krishna consciousness has many different levels. You can be 1% Krishna conscious and 99% in Maya. You can be 2% Krishna conscious and 98% in Maya. You can be 75% Krishna conscious and be 25% in Maya. You can be 100% Krishna conscious, and that is full Krishna consciousness. So how do we begin our Krishna consciousness? Chatur vidha bhajante mang jana sukriti norjanar atoja gyasir artarti jnani char bharatar shava. We start off partial Krishna consciousness. We're desiring wealth, desiring relief from distress, inquisitive, curious, or seeking knowledge of the Absolute. These are all considered material. They are not considered full Krishna consciousness. So we all start on the platform of not being fully Krishna conscious. The secret is, the quicker you can get into this program of sincerely trying to achieve full Krishna consciousness, the quicker you will start to really taste some really incredible nectar. This is the insider secret. If I remain hovering in the introductory level, you know, wanting money, wanting relief from distress, Krishna give me this, Krishna give me that, give me, you see. That's like Christianity, you know, God give me my daily chapatis. So, the key is, if you really want to taste the nectar, if you want to be, you know, really relishing, as Bhagavatam says, with great delight, these personalities are engaged in devotional service since time immemorial. Mudab, with great delight. If you want to be on that, and you know, in that echelon of nectar tasters, who experience great delight at every moment. You see, and you're 24 hours, no matter where you may be, in the temple, commuting, at work, at home, wherever you may be, you're actually absorbed in pure Krishna bhakti. If you want to be in that category of nectar tasters, then you have to become very serious to cultivate full Krishna consciousness. And you may say, well, I don't know, you know, how is it possible? I'm so fallen, you know, I'm so lazy, you know, I'm greedy, I'm lusty. How is it possible I could ever become fully Krishna conscious? You know, maybe if I'm lucky, I'll remember Krishna at the time of death and I'll get some special mercy, he'll take me back. But we should really try to cultivate pure, full Krishna consciousness now as much as we possibly can. Actually, Prabhupada instructed me directly. In one letter, he said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. You see, that is full Krishna consciousness. When you are so pure that Krishna revealed himself, premanjana charito bhakti valochanena santak sadaiva hridayeshu vilokoyanti yang shamushundanam machinchya ganasva rupam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. Prabhupada was pushing me. Now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. So this is actually what Prabhupada wants. He wants each one of his followers, his disciples, his grand disciples, he wants all of us to become fully Krishna conscious. That is the real meaning of Mahatma, you see. Someone who is fully Krishna conscious. To the extent that we are not fully Krishna conscious, then we are still tinged with that mentality which is called Duratma. Duratma is not a very nice position to be in. It's miserable. Anxiety, you know, lamentation, fearfulness. Being a Duratma is not a very nice thing. So we're still lugging around this excess baggage called Duratma mentality. You see? So we have to take advantage of the opportunity that Prabhupada is giving us to actually throw off this Duratma, you know, excess baggage. Throw it off. Say, I'm tired of being lusty, of being angry, of being greedy, of being in fear, illusion, lamenting. I really want to taste the full nectar of Krishna Bhakti. Why did Prabhupada always have the 10 offenses described at the initiation ceremony? Is chanting 16 rounds and following the four principles enough? No, it's not. You have to chant without committing the aparads. Then you achieve full Krishna consciousness. You can go. You could go on following the four principles and chanting 16 rounds for millions of years and never achieve full Krishna consciousness. One has to consciously try to avoid the 10 offenses. It's so important, the namaparads, to avoid them. That is what separates us from full Krishna consciousness. Really, that's all it really is. It's the namaparad. You see, we're committing so many namaparads. So we really have to get very, very serious, very, very sober about this activity of chanting the holy names without offense. If we do that, if we start really getting serious about it, we're just going to go, wow, I didn't know there was this much nectar in Krishna consciousness. I knew it was the best, but I didn't know it was this good. You see, that's what will happen. If one becomes very, very serious about purifying the heart, becoming completely free of all forms of opera, you see, becomes very serious to become a true sadhu of a mahatma. You see, then everything comes. Prabhupada told us. One godbrother, he asked Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, what happens when we give someone a Simply Wonderful on the street? Srila Prabhupada said, he will come to your temple and he will become Simply Wonderful. And then he said, Krishna is Simply Wonderful. This process of Krishna consciousness is Simply Wonderful and you are all Simply Wonderful. And then one devotee said, Prabhupada is Simply Wonderful. Prabhupada said, that's all right, I have kirtan. So, this process, simply one of them means to become fully Krishna conscious. So it's not beyond our reach to become fully Krishna conscious. We may think, oh, it's so hard, how I get everybody, you know, I've had so many difficulties, I had some fall downs, I had some slip downs, you know, I had this up and this down. How is it possible I can pull out of this quagmire and really become fully Krishna conscious? But actually, it's not that difficult. It really isn't. The first time I met His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada face to face, he was explaining this point. He told us, actually, most of the audience were hippies. It was at the Rathiyatra Festival back in the old hippie days in San Francisco. And there was about 300 devotees and about 3,000 hippies. There was a huge crowd. And Prabhupada said, he said, "You, all of you have seen God." He said, "You have all seen God." So he told us. He said, because Krishna says, "I am the light of the sun and the moon." And so anytime you see illumination, you're seeing God. He's making that point. And then he said, and you are drinking water once, twice, more than that every day. He said, if every time you drink water, you remember that Krishna is the taste of the water, then immediately you become Krishna conscious. He said, to become Krishna conscious is not a difficult job. It simply requires practice. So in this way he explained to us. So when we drink some water, you see, a very nice thing, water, you see, we can remember, Krishna. You see, is that difficult? Even if you're working a job, you go to the water cooler and get some water, you know. What's the difficulty? Krishna. Is it difficult to remember Krishna whenever you drink some water? It's not difficult. So in this way, it's actually very easy to become Krishna conscious. You just have to go. Krishna. It's all you have to do. It's that simple. It's simple for the simple, right? The old slogan, difficult for the crooked. So we have to become honest. We have to honestly admit that actually, you know, I'm really corrupt person. I'm wretched, sinful demon, actually. I'm desperately in need of rectification. If I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm really a pretty fixed up devotee and pretty great, you know, doing this and that. But no, we really have to. The more we advance in Krishna consciousness, the more we will feel, you know, I'm desperately in need of rectification. Even though I've been around this movement for so long, I'm still holding on to lust. I'm still holding on to greed. I'm still holding on to anger. I'm still holding on to fault finding. We should really honestly look at our own hearts and see really how wretched we are. You may say, well, come on, Prabhu, don't be so negative. No, this is positive stuff I'm giving you. This is high-level stuff that will actually take you out of the modes and help you come to the position of full Krishna consciousness where you can taste unbelievable nectar at every minute. What I'm explaining, this is real. This works. You may say, well, I tried it, you know, it doesn't work for me. Well, this process works. You simply have to work the process, that's all. If you work the process works. If you don't work the process, nothing's going to happen. You're not going to go anywhere. You just spin your wheels and you won't make any advancement. You won't taste the nectar very much. But if you consciously try to cultivate spiritual advancement, that every day you wake up and you pray, my dear Lord Krishna, please bless me today, that I can carefully discipline my thoughts, my words, and my deeds, that they're all pure. Please let my every thought, my every word, my every action be pure. Please, Krishna, help me. I'm so fallen, I'm always drifting off into lust, anger, and greed. Please, this day, I'm begging you, Help me keep every thought, word, and deed completely pure. You see? The only enemy we have actually that can stop this movement is our own anartas, really. There's no external enemy that can stop the Krishna consciousness movement. The one enemy that can shut down our movement is in here. Mr. Lust, Mr. Anger, Mr. Greed, hanging out in our hearts, you see. That's the enemy that can stop us. So we become very determined. I'm Mr. Lust and Mr. Anger and Mr. Greed have to take a long hike and they're never allowed back in the door. Get lost, Mr. Lust. Get lost, Mr. Greed. Get lost, Mr. Anger. Get the hell out of here and don't you ever come back. You see? If we take this very heavy attitude, why did Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur say that every morning you must take a pair of shoes and beat your mind 110? Why did he give that instruction? Because there's so many lusty, angry, greedy thoughts just spinning around in there, you know, in that psyche, you know, just kind of lurking around, poking around in our psyches, you know. You really got to get heavy on your own mind. You got to become a Prabhupada said strict on oneself, and you know, we should be very kind and soft on all the devotees, our fellow devotees. But on our own mind, we should be very heavy on our own mind. It's actually blissful. It's cathartic. It purges away painful dirt if you become strict with your own mind. And then, of course, at night, you go to the broom closet, pick out really a good thick broomstick, 100 times with a broomstick. This is the kind of attitude we should have about our own internal cleansing. We're actually running on two tracks. We have our external activities, our relationships with each other, which is absolutely vital. And then we have our relationship with the outside world, our preaching spirit, how to revolutionize the planet. So we have internal and external things happening simultaneously on parallel lines. You see, you have your own internal cleansing, you have your relationships with the devotees, and you have your relationship for preaching with the outside world. And Prabhupada very nicely talks about these two parallel tracks in the fifth canto purport, where he talks about the Nisinga prayers, actually, that we sing every morning. And this is an incredible meditation you can do while every time you chant the Nisinga prayers. You can remember this description of Srila Prabhupada. Those four words, actually, Bahir Nisingo, Hridaye Nisingo. Prabhupada has expanded them into a huge translation, which is the most wonderful thing you will ever read in your life. This is how Prabhupada translates those four words. Literally, we are praying, Bahir Nisinga means Nisinga on the outside, Bahir Nisinga, Hridaye Nisinga, Nisinga within. Literally, we're saying Nisinga out there and Nisinga in here. That's what we're literally saying. But Prabhupada has extrapolated this understanding from this. He says that, may Lord Nisringadeva dwell within my heart, killing all of my bad propensities, so that my mind may become perfectly clean and I can give peace to the entire world. You see, every devotee is meant to be a powerful ambassador of peace on this planet. Krishna bhakti, good fortune. A devotee is meant to be someone who can bestow good fortune on the entire universe, actually. That is the meaning of devotee. Because he completely purifies his own heart and he just emanates Krishna. He's always thinking about Krishna, he's always talking about Krishna, he's always acting in a Krishna conscious way, so he's manifesting Krishna within and he's trying to manifest Krishna without as much as he can in all directions. You see? So this is what we ISKCON members have to do. This is what Prabhupada wants us to do. Bahir Nisinga, Hridaye Nisinga. On two tracks. On the one hand, we're really seriously cleansing our hearts. On the other hand, we're trying to give that wonderful nectar of Krishna to everyone, wherever we go. We're always thinking, scheming, plotting. How can we push forward this movement? You see? This is what Prabhupada wants of us. To be spiritual revolutionaries, to be very clean and very strict on ourselves, and then very actively acting as spiritual revolutionaries to push forward this movement, each and every one of us. Not just the sannyasis, not just the GBCs, you know, but everyone. This is a preaching movement. It's not a sit around and get fat on chapatis movement. You see? Everyone is meant to take up the spirit of pushing forward this movement. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of Indian railways. Some time ago, they had one poster which was distributed throughout their network of train stations. It said that the duty of every employee is to see that the wheel of the train is turning. That's the duty of every employee. Now, how many employees are actually directly connected with the wheel? Well, there's the engineer there, you know, to the throttle. But there's some clerk also sitting in the office. In India, there's always a whole layer of clerks. The form is to be signed here, is to be signed here. At least that's the old system. I think they're modernizing it now. But some clerk has to sign a paper authorizing the train to go out of the station. So, in this way, every employee has to see that the train is rolling down the track. So, in the same way, it is the duty of each and every one of Srila Prabhupada's followers that we see that this Krishna consciousness movement is moving forward. Whatever our position is, it doesn't matter. We may be a big Hanuman, or we may be a little spider, but both of them are constructing that bridge, you see, for Ram to come into Lanka and defeat that rascal Ravana. So in this way, we very seriously purify our hearts and very seriously try to uplift the global consciousness. Then we will taste a nectar which is absolutely incredible. Actually, we work it from both ends. The more you purify your heart, the more naturally the global consciousness is uplifted. And the more you focus on trying to uplift the global consciousness by preaching, book distribution, prasadam distribution, harinam, you know, festivals, all that, etc., that will purify you internally as well. So both, they're complementary. The more you focus on quality rounds, quality relationships with Vaishnavas, you see, these things will then translate into the movement becoming more attractive to the general public and people naturally joining. It's just, they feed off each other. Internal cleansing feeds off, you know, external expansion. External expansion also brings about internal cleansing. They complement each other. So we should focus on both things. We should simultaneously focus on purifying our own hearts and at the same time focus on spreading this Krishna consciousness movement, because they are mutually compatible and mutually beneficial activities. I'm thinking perhaps that we can see if any of you have some questions this time and try to answer them according to the wonderful divine inspired teachings of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you for a very nice class. What would your literal translation be for Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's broomstick and shoes?
Yes, I actually found it in the Vedabase, but I think I forgot to bookmark it, and I don't know where it is, but he actually described what it meant literally. There's some place where Bhakti Siddhanta described it, but the essence of it was that one, you know, understands one's fallen nature. Basically, you remind yourself that you're of your actual fallen nature, like that. It's not physically taking up shoes and a broomstick. It's reminding yourself that actually, you know, I have a long way to go in Krishna consciousness. I have many faults. I shouldn't be proud. In this way. that way. Remind yourself, I shouldn't be proud. Basically, you're putting yourself, keeping yourself in a humble position. That's what it really means. Cultivating a humble attitude about yourself. Reminding yourself that you're not great. You're not great. That's, we all have to do that. Because we tend to get, as soon as, you know, someone says, "Whoa, Prabhu, you gave a really wonderful lecture." You go, "Wow, yeah, I am Jagat Guru after all." You know, there's a tendency to get carried away sometimes, thinking, "I'm great. I'm great." That's, we really have to keep curbing ourselves down. Think, you know, I'm really, I had to really realize that, you know, I'm very tiny and I'm in this vast material ocean, and any minute I can become drowned. I mean, look at the great Vaishnavas in history. How a great, great Vaishnavas became sidetracked. Look at Bharat Maharaj. Look at Vibhavamangala Thakur. In his previous life, he had achieved Bhava platform. He'd gone all the way to Bhava platform. And then he fell down again and became a playboy his next life. So we have to see the how vulnerable even these great persons. We are so far from Bhava platform. But even someone who had come to Bhava platform, he fell down and became a lusty playboy. You see, we have to realize how vulnerable we are to the material nature. To keep reminding ourselves, stay humble, stay humble, stay humble. And that is a good way of understanding it. Keep yourself humble.
It's important too, because within pride, all these other arthas are contained within pride. I've heard that the other, everything, the lust, the greed, the anger within pride are all these things.
They're all connected.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we're proud, then automatically pride will, if we have pride, then that pride will, then we'll be victims of lust, anger, and greed. Those are symptoms of a proud person. If he's proud, that means he thinks that he has the right to enjoy. He doesn't think that everything is for Krishna's enjoyment. But he tends with this false, with a delusion of greatness, and he's thinking that actually I should be the one that gets to enjoy. So he's lusty for enjoyment. And then when he doesn't get his enjoyment satisfied, he becomes angry. And the same principle with greed. Same principle. So pride is really, there's the old saying, I think it's Milton, maybe it's the Bible. Pride cometh before the fall. It's a very, very wise instruction. We really have to cultivate humility. Sincere humility. And this is the advantage of associating with devotees. Because devotee association, if properly engaged in, will facilitate one becoming humble. We all know that the first offense against the holy name is to blaspheme or criticize those devotees who have dedicated their lives through spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. We have a tendency to do that, sadly. If someone becomes a great, powerful, successful teacher and we're not on his level, then we think, well, you know, he's not really that great. He's got this fault and that fault, you know. We try to minimize the devotee. That means we're envious. And even if we don't say it out loud, we're actually committing offense in our mind towards that Vaishnava. So how do you overcome that tendency? Well, the easy way is, instead of waiting for the offenses to come and then, you know, trying to cut them away, the easy way is to prevent that from ever even happening by cultivating a positive attitude. Be proactive instead of reactive. You see? The easy way is to always see what wonderful qualities all the devotees have in our whole movement. To cultivate a wonderful attitude about every single devotee in our movement. Even if you haven't met him, just by hearing about him or hearing a lecture, you go, well, that devotee really had a wonderful realization. He has wonderful enthusiasm. Oh, and that devotee, he sings with such devotion. He may have had some difficulty spiritually, but he sings so nicely. You see? Try to find something good about every single devotee. And there's a little insider secret in this regard. If you are worshiping the devotees in this way, and even in your mind, glorifying, appreciating their nice qualities, guess what happens? All those good qualities that you're appreciating, they shower upon you. You inherit all the good qualities that you're appreciating in the other devotees. Just imagine if you're meditating in the good qualities of all the devotees throughout the entire movement. Then all those good qualities are going to just start inundating your consciousness because you're meditating on them. Bhagavad Gita, Sangat Sanjayate Kama, one's consciousness develops according to one's association. So if you're always associating with the wonderful qualities that all the devotees have, then guess what? You're going to start getting all those qualities yourself automatically by spiritual osmosis. So this is a wonderful thing. Just learn how to appreciate. Even if somebody you can't stand, you have a hard time getting along with them, you know, it happens sometimes, you know, let's face it. But step back from that difficulty you're having with the relationship with that person. And just think, but they have this wonderful redeeming quality, you see. What if I was on a desert island and there was no other devotee, but I had to associate with this one devotee? Actually, I would appreciate that devotee. If I was in that situation where I had no one else and he was the only devotee I could associate with. You see, so in this way, we have to, what is that saying? Familiarity breeds contempt. We have a tendency to become familiar with each other. Why did Prabhupada say we should call each other respectfully as Prabhu? You see? Because familiarity breeds contempt. Just see how much respect, by reading Prabhupada's books, how much respect they had for one another. Even the enemies in the Kurukshetra, when Arjuna went to Duryodhana, how were they addressing one another? My dear brother. Can you imagine? They were fighting to the death during the day and at night, affectionately, my dear brother. You see? My dear brother. How much love and affection, even with fighting during the day. Actually, we can't even conceive of what that was like. Even nowadays, when there are athletes competing to win a game, they don't have as much love and affection as the warriors had in the former times, who were fighting to the death during the day. Even athletes can't get together with as much love as affection as the warriors did in former times in the evening after the battle was over. We can't even conceive of that level of human culture, of Vedic culture. See, Vedic culture means human culture. As soon as Vedic culture is finished, then it's simply animal life. Mlecha Yavana is the animal life. Vedic culture means real human culture. Actually, in ISKCON, many times we make nicknames, you know, we take a devotee's name, we cut it short and make it kind of cute, and, you know, we bounce off these nicknames. But, you know, in Nairobi, Prabhupada chastised the devotees for doing that. He heard them making the nicknames, you know, their spiritual names. Prabhupada didn't like it. He chastised them. Bhagavat Prabhu told me. He was there when Prabhupada said them. Prabhupada was very disturbed. You know, Prabhupada gave us all these wonderful transcendental names, and devotees just start chopping them in little pieces. So actually, the more we can be very respectful to one another, always in the mood of appreciating and each other's qualities. Of course, that doesn't mean that those who have the responsibility to correct should not do that. That must be done in a mood of loving service. The spiritual master has to correct, the older devotees have to correct the younger devotees. That's a responsibility. Chanakya Pandit says if the father who doesn't chastise and the guru who doesn't chastise, they're actually the enemy of their son and their disciple. So it is a responsibility of the parents, of spiritual masters, the older devotees to instruct and guide the younger devotees. But it has to be done. Actually, unless you can appreciate the good qualities of a person, you're not qualified to point out their faults. You're really not. It means you're a fault finder. you're still tinged with envy. A person, though, who can actually genuinely appreciate the good qualities of a person is actually qualified to point out their bad qualities. Because it's done simply in a pure mood of service. And if we're corrected by a person in that consciousness, then actually we like it. Prabhupada, we knew Prabhupada was our well-wisher, and he could tell us anything, and it was like nectar, even if he was telling us, you know, what rascals we were, and really getting angry, heavily angry at us, you see. It was nectar. Mercy. Any other questions? I think it ends at about 8:30 for Prashadam. Something like that. Any other questions? Everyone satisfied?
I have a question. Mm. For those of us who are working outside, mm-hmm. we often deal with people, non-devotees.
I am hard of hearing, so speak loudly and clearly.
So, for those of us who are working outside, mm-hmm. we often deal with non-devotees, and many times they behave in such a way, they try to, you know, take advantage of our mm-hmm. being good to them.
Yes.
You know, they take it lightly.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And they try to, in a way, exploit us.
So oh, absolutely. They will try to do that, no doubt.
In such a situation, and when you see it happening many times, then you become angry. But if you...
No, you have to do it. You have to be cool about it. You have to be very clever about it, you see. You know the story of the snake that became a devotee, the cobra became a devotee. You know that story? Yes. And there was one cobra. He was always harassing the villagers, you know, chasing after them. They were scared to death of this cobra. But then he became a disciple of Narad Muni. And now all the little children are having fun. They're throwing rocks at him. You see? So, what to do? You know, now I'm a gentle cobra, a Vaishnava. I won't never think of biting anyone. But now they're taking advantage of my gentleness. And they're harassing me like anything. He said, show your hoods, but don't bite. So you have to be very clever. You got to play very tough with them externally. You know. You have to show a tough. You have to make a very. You have to show that you're very strong. You're not going to let it push you around. You have to show like that. Prabhupada said that they couldn't cheat. He said they cannot cheat me. I was a Calcutta boy. You see. You have to have your street smarts. Becoming a devotee doesn't mean you abandon your street smarts. Maybe you don't have any street smarts, but you have to be street smart also in this material world. When you're dealing with cheaters, you have to be a bigger cheater than they are for Krishna. Don't let him push you around. You have to take a strong stand because you want to have the maximum shakti for serving this movement. You let them push you around, they'll just, you know, they'll take everything away from you and leave you with nothing. You want to have as much success as you can have in this material world, so you have more shakti to engage in Prabhupada's service and your Guru Maharaj's service. So, actually, Prabhupada said a Krishna conscious businessman, he can aspire to become the wealthiest businessman in the world. So I advise my disciples who are out there in corporate America, work your way to the top, take over the corporation. We don't want devotees who are, you know, incompetent, have to live on welfare to survive. No. That's not going to spread our movement. We want devotees who can get out there and move to the top of the ladder in whatever field they're in, become very successful leaders in the material world. Just imagine if we had, you know, a devotee president of the United States. Someone who really moved up the ladder, you know, intelligently played the game every step of the way for Krishna. Yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad dahosi, dadasi. So you get out there and you become successful for Krishna. The more you have success in the material world, people will respect you and they'll hear from you. So use that for Krishna. You want to see our devotees become very big success in this material world. That will help our movement like anything. You see. Prabhupada says one of the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava is expert. That means also in material dealings, Prabhupada explains. Material dealings also, he's very expert. He doesn't let the karmi, you know, take advantage of him. Devotee is always on top. He's always the winner. Yatra Yogeshvara Krishna. Wherever there is Krishna consciousness, there is victory. So you should always be victorious in these, in all of your dealings. You come out the winner. You just did them. Don't let them defeat you in office politics. You need to be more clever. For Krishna. Not for sense gratification, for Krishna. Any other questions? Yes.
I just heard you say that we'll have to share them. It's about 8:30. We had been preparing for an arti ceremony.
Oh, okay. All right. There's an arti now. If the arti, the thing is, I have my ears were damaged when I was a small boy, and if it's real loud, I cannot stay. Loud cartels, but if it's a real soft, mellow one, then I can stay. But if you like me, I mean, I just, in reality, I just, I'd like to be here, but if it's not, if it's kind of real soft and mellow, just slight little cartels, I mean, they're really, my ears are messed up badly. Over the years, they've just gone downhill. It says I'm losing my hearing. If I hear a loud kirtan, it's just hurting me. But even with earplugs, it's bad for me. So it'd be very nice, this one evening only. You can have just a real sweet, mellow, but enlivened, but mellow. Not so much into the drum and the cartel, but more into the voice. So the holy name, actually it's nicer that way anyway, when the holy name becomes more heard, and the drums and the cartel just kind of there enhancing it. That would be appreciated. If the enthusiasm gets carried away, it's all right. I'll just, you know, go back to the room there. But I'd like to be able to, with you all in the kirtan tonight. It'd be very sweet. So anyway, we'll stop here, and we thank you very much for your wonderful participation in Srila Prabhupada's movement. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.